Y'all ready for this? Banana bop 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 bop. Alright, let's do this. Oh, hello there, fellow makers. Welcome to the office. Time for a podcast!
It's podcast time.
It's podcast making time! Yay! We're very excited. We saw the last episode of BattleBots. We won't spoil anything, but it was very exciting.
Yes.
This
is the bottle cat.
Bottle cats! Yeah!
That doesn't work. Let's just talk about BattleBots for the next hour.
Yeah. Right? All right. This is the BattleBots hour. Actually, no. We shouldn't talk about BattleBots. People probably haven't seen who won.
No spoilers in the chat. No spoilers. We're recording this live, so we have our live chat with us, the Prop Tarts. Hi, guys. No BattleBots spoilers.
So today we're talking about tools, one of my very favorite subjects. We're going to talk about basically a bunch of different disciplines inside of prop and costume making and what sort of tools you should probably get. If you're getting into it.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, the idea of splitting up by kind of category of makers. I'm curious to see what kind of overlaps we have. Mm-hmm. So that's something we've found. We're working with kind of some unique materials in cosplay, and the kinds of tools you use can sometimes be universal, depending on what things you're using them for, which is really cool.
It's pretty great. So, we're just going to dive right into it. We got the Prop Tarts hanging out with us right now. We'll probably get some really great suggestions from them and some good questions from them. And, let's get started. So, first, just sort of like general making of things, right? What are the kind of tools that most every prop and costume maker should have?
Something to cut stuff with.
Something to cut stuff with. I'm going to start and just say, out of the gate, a rotary tool is pretty much standard across the board, and there are a lot of different types you can get, but really any rotary tool that can spin a bit will work for you. So we have a bunch of them. We've used a bunch of them. I've personally murdered two Dremels.
Those weren't ours either. We've never owned an official Dremel brand.
Yeah.
Our first one we purchased was a Craftsman from Sears, I think.
That's right, our wedding.
Yes, our wedding registry was all gift card things for Sears, so we could get, like, I don't know, I guess kitchen stuff. We just went to the power tool section.
Yeah, we got our rotary tool with a flex shaft. I personally really like the flex shaft. I know some people would rather hold the rotary tool itself. We also got a Craftsman scroll saw, which we still have, and it still works. The rotary tool died. I think we had it for 5 years. Mm-hmm. We replaced it with a Fordham, which is about 10 times as expensive, but it's really, really cool.
And that's a good example, because we use that rotary tool on every project. Like, that little Craftsman got used a whole bunch, and that's when you know, like, when to upgrade, you know, to something nicer, is that, like, you use it so much and you kind of rely on it. It's like, well, we want something that's more reliable, that's more powerful, that's easier to control, because we use it all the time. And it's like, if it's something you don't use very much, and it's like, you can just, you know, buy the same thing again, I guess. But, oh, Bill found something.
Yeah, there was a question in the chat about 3D printers. We will get the 3D printers, but I'm going to just tag Voice Over Dad here in the chat with a video we can go watch. So, yeah, rotary tool, pretty much across the board, really, really great to have. What's another good general use tool to have? Like rulers. Rulers are awesome.
Yeah, and like, I mean, a rotary tool helps you do everything faster, but it's really just a cutter and a sander, right? And a drill, too, I guess.
And a grinder.
And a grinder, yeah.
You can use it to sharpen stuff if you want.
So if you are going to be cutting things by hand and don't have one of those, just a really nice knife, a nice comfortable knife.
Mm-hmm.
We like the extendable snap-off blade knives because we tend to cut through thicker material, so you can extend the blade, have it in an angle, and when you cut through things like foam, it has a better purchase. Instead of just keeping the blade super short, it tends to catch a lot easier that way.
Yeah. You also want to get a ruler that's got a metal edge. Automation Jason in the chat pointed that out. You can get really cool ones that are clear and see-through, but they have a metal edge on them. They're not very expensive either. They're super, super helpful. Yeah. You want the metal edge because if you have a plastic ruler and you're using it as a straight edge for your knife, you're going to start carving into that edge, and it will no longer be a straight edge.
Yeah, so like a general metal ruler, I guess depending on how big you usually work, you either want, you know, a big one. You can get really, really tiny rulers too. I don't know if they have... They probably don't have transparent ones with a metal edge that are really flexible, but we have some of those. I think they're called see-through rulers.
Like the letter C.
Yeah, so if you work with a lot of curved surfaces, it bends around with it. You can trace stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of different sizes and versions of all those different rulers, just normal metal rulers or see-through rulers. Something that gets used a ton are needle files. And there are normal needle files. There's also ones that I got recently that are diamond-coated, like gritty-looking ones.
Have you used those yet?
A little bit, and they're pretty great. What's awesome about those is with the normal file, the cutting direction matters. With the ones that are just like a gritty surface, it doesn't matter what direction you run them in. Diamond-coated.
Yeah, we use those a lot when we were doing a lot of... Bondo and PVC foam work.
Yeah.
Just like making our own grooves.
Mm-hmm. Super, super duper handy. What are some other good tools? You know what? Just a power drill of any kind. A drill press is awesome. But if you don't have one of those yet, just a normal power drill can do a lot of the things that... You know, a drill press would do. It just doesn't do it as well.
Yeah, Bill used that in the last video to kind of work like a lathe, which is neat.
You could definitely, and if you have a power drill and a rotary tool, you can chuck up a piece of material in your drill, spin it, and then use your rotary tool to carve it. Again, not the best option. If you actually have a lathe, you can get much more accurate results that way. But if all you have is a power drill and a rotary tool, there's a lot of things that you can pull
off. Yeah, that's totally true. And that can be used on so many different things. Something that's kind of, I would consider a tool is a hot glue gun. Because it's a kind of adhesive, but hot glue works great for just about anything. It's just usually temporary, unless the thing is like, got, you know, a nice surface to grab onto. So like... You can hot glue fabric together, and that's just on there, as long as it's, you know, a fabric that has, you know, a thread to it, so the hot glue gets in there. But, like, we're currently doing some stuff and had to remove some hot glue that was, I think, plastic to wood, and it pops right off. So
yeah, it was pretty strong on there, but when I gave it what for, it came right off.
Yeah, so that's just nice to always have a hot glue gun nearby.
Got a great question in the chat from VoiceOver Dad. He says, are Harbor Freight tools worth it, or is it better to save up for something better? Now, usually what I recommend people do is you pick a project and start with what you have, but if you need a new tool or material, that's the best time to go out and buy that one tool for that job. Buy the best one you can afford at the time, and if that means going to Harbor Freight to get a drill or a rotary tool that you're pretty sure is probably going to break in a year or two... that's fine. That's a year or two of good use out of that tool. And hopefully by then when it breaks, you can afford to get the better one. Or sometimes those Harbor Freight tools that you bought, you don't use them very often and they work just fine when you do. For example, I have a circular saw. I got there in like 2010, I think it was $25. And every once in a while I need to knock down some big pieces of wood. I just use that thing to zip it out. I will say I bought a better blade for it than the stock blade, but that thing's been just fine. I don't use a circular saw very often, so I'm not going to spend $500 on a good saw. A $25 one from Harbor Freight was just fine.
If you go to their website, the Harbor Freight website, people leave reviews on the products. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Amazon reviews, so it's worth going there, browsing around, and just seeing what people say. Because it's interesting. Some things you'll look up, people will be like, it's not very good at what it's designed for, but it's really good for this. And you're like, oh! like because of the DIY community is so clever. So it's worth checking out those, too.
Another example, the other direction is a jigsaw. Jigsaws are, again, not the best saw you can get, but they are useful for a wide range of things. If you end up using a jigsaw a lot, spend the money on a good one, because I have gone through two from Harbor Freight, and they're both equally terrible.
Yeah, I think Bob from I Like to Make Stuff did a video fairly recently in the last year where he changed his mind about jigsaws, because it turns out he just had a crummy one and that's why he hated using them. And then he did a video kind of on like, okay, I like them now. Here's some really cool things you can do with them. I think it was him who did that. I hope I'm not wrong.
I think it was Bob.
Yeah, but he got a really nice one. It showed all the useful things you can do with it.
Yeah. In the chat here, Tasmania Nerd says, a silver Sharpie is a must. All different colors of Sharpies. We recently got white markers from Revmark that have been awesome for marking on darker material.
Yeah, they're not like paint pens. They're like white Sharpies. It's really interesting.
And they seem to last longer than silver Sharpies. Silver Sharpies tend to wear out on foam really fast. Mm-hmm. We'll have links for all of this stuff in the description of this video. So you can go check that out later. Cool. All
right, so that was some really good general
ones. Yeah, general making things. We're going to hit a couple of different topics. So just a quick housekeeping thing. We got foam smithing next. Talk a little bit about sewing. Talk a little bit about painting. Talk about 3D printing. And then I want to go into a little bit of machining.
Ooh, foam smithing first.
We're going to talk about foam smithing first. Do I have my... Oh, look. Look, there's a book right here. Oh, just like in my book.
What does the book say we should get?
Let's find out.
Probably a rotary tool. A sharp knife. a metal ruler.
Actually, you can see that's our old Craftsman rotary tool right there. That is no longer with us.
I would say I miss it, but it served its purpose.
Yeah.
I like the one I have now.
So a lot of the general making type tools are the same for foam smithing, but... let me put this back. But there are a couple of tools that you definitely want to get for your foam smithing. So we talked about a sharp knife and a metal ruler and a sharpener. Very important.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, it seems counterintuitive, but the softer the material is you use, the more it dulls the blade. What? So like even like if you go even softer, like open cell foam, like upholstery foam, and use scissors on it, that dulls the blades so fast.
Well, it's the bubbles in there. Yeah. It's that texture that really, really eats away at that edge.
So EVA foam is a closed cell foam, but still it does have those little tiny bubbles in there that expand the EVA, I guess, mm-hmm. into sheet form. So when you drag your knife through it, works great the first time. Second time gets a little more difficult. Third time it starts to catch. And that's when you should be sharpening it, even before it gets to that point.
A heat gun. I saw someone in the chat yell out heat gun.
Yeah.
That is definitely worth getting. We actually just got another one from Harbor Freight. The previous one died. Now, it lasted like 7 years. It was like a $12 heat gun. That's a pretty good track record for a really cheap heat gun. We did upgrade to the nicer one that was like 40 bucks, but it has a stand on it so that you can turn the heat gun on, set it down, and it will hold itself up, and then you can hold something in front of it.
Yeah.
Really handy.
It's good for like just leaving it there and, you know, putting stuff on top of it, like Bill was saying. It is kind of a pain to hold up, I've been finding, because it's quite heavy. So if you are in a situation where you do want to hold it up in the air, you might want to go with, you know, a normal size heat gun. I think we're going to invest in another one, though, and just have two.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Like that's something we use on every single foam build. So we want to always make sure we have one that works in the shop. It's very important.
Yeah. Well, also Harbor Freight's right down the street. We can just go.
That's true. One. I guess
we should buy like five of them just to have money. If the last one is any indication, this new one should last us 7 years. Well, it was about three times as expensive. It should last 21 years, I think.
The first time we turned it on, smoke came out of it.
But it doesn't do that anymore.
It doesn't do that anymore.
So. But there's a lot of useful stuff in this book.
Yeah. Turns out. It's fun to go through it because it's like Bill doesn't remember what he wrote.
I have no memory of writing
this. So long ago.
Another really great tool to have is some sort of mechanical sanding. Now, again, if all you have is your rotary tool, you can get by with that. For like beveling edges on your foam, or if you have a texture you need to get rid of. But I really recommend, if you can afford it, to get yourself a disc and belt sander combo. It's got one motor that spins the disc, and it also spins a belt around it.
Yeah,
gives
if you're
you a
doing
lot of options.
Any kind of, for foam smithing, if you're doing a blade of sorts, like an axe or a sword, that just saves so much time.
Yeah, there's a small one I really like from Harbor Freight that's just a 1-inch wide belt. and a little like 3 or 4 inch disc. I think you can get that for like $100 maybe.
Is that the one you used to have and you broke?
I killed it dead.
Yeah. I'm just glad you didn't hurt yourself.
I didn't hurt myself.
That's the moral of the story.
But it definitely died.
And our early, this was in the townhouse.
Mm-hmm. It was way back when.
We had a couple of those can lights with a whole bunch of power cords going everywhere. And it was just like, it wasn't managed well.
This poor guy right here.
Yeah.
$85. This thing was really, really useful. Unless you destroy it like I did.
Yeah, it ate a power cord and just zapped itself. That was sad times.
VoiceOver Dad's curious about glue guns. We just have a normal one, like, from the craft store. We actually have, like, 5 or 6 of them. I didn't even buy them. They just appeared. I don't know where
they're
they
like
came from.
They're like stray cats. You just kind of wander in. You never buy a hot glue gun.
You can get some really crazy cool industrial ones. We have normal ones. We just get high temp hot glue. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that the glue gun you have can handle a high temp hot glue.
Yeah, if you're in the craft store, they tend to focus on the low temp ones for crafting so people hurt themselves less. So you want to make sure you get the high temp one. We like the bigger sticks too. They have the really thin, tiny ones. You'll be surprised how fast you go through those. So normal size sticks.
Buy lots of glue sticks.
Yes.
Just tons of them.
Yeah, we just buy them in bulk and keep them in a drawer.
Yeah, just hundreds at a time.
Yeah.
An upgraded tool, again, not necessary for foam smithing, but once I got one, I couldn't figure out how I lived without it, is a bandsaw. I see someone in the chat says Craigslist is a good source for tools. If you're looking for power tools, you can get used ones for fairly cheap on Craigslist. Even if it looks like an old tool and it looks like maybe rusty, it's probably still good. Tools made in the 50s and 60s and earlier were tended to be very durable.
Yeah, before the days of plastic everything. Yeah.
If it still turns on, if it still runs, then it's probably fine. And if you want to get a good one, I just found one here on at Harbor Freight. It's $135. That's a pretty good bargain for a 9-inch benchtop bandsaw. It might not last you forever. My 9-inch bandsaw, we have a couple. The smaller one, the red one that we have, sounds like the motor on that's not long for this world. But that's fine. We've got years of use out of it. If I have to replace that, it was like $130 new. I'm not going to cry about it. There's so much you can do with a bandsaw, especially for foam. You can tilt the bed, get perfect bevels cut on stuff. You can swap out the blade for like a soft materials blade if you're like doing some free-handed cuts and you want them to be really, really clean. There's so much you can do with a bandsaw. I recommend everyone who's really getting serious about your foam smithing, consider getting a bandsaw, or at least looking on Craigslist and seeing if there's a good one available used. Anything under $100 for a 9-inch bandsaw would be a real bargain. Rusty's Props got an air-powered die grinder, which is basically an air-powered rotary tool. It's a monster that is crazy, powerful, definitely happy I got it. Not necessary. Air tools are really awesome. If you have a good compressor and airlines to run everything, that's amazing. Definitely not necessary for foam. But if you're doing anything with metal or more robust materials, that can be super, super handy.
About the only time we use a compressor for foam is for some of the sealing methods we do. And sometimes some of the paint.
For spraying, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll either use an airbrush or a critter spray gun. And I mean, you can just brush on your finishes, but we found that's if you're doing a whole costume and you have like a big backyard, you can go out and spray your whole costume at the same time. It's a critter gun seems to be more efficient than like cans of Plasti-Dip because you'll go through those so fast.
Yeah, you're paying for the accelerant. Remember that.
Yeah, it's mostly accelerant.
That can is mostly the accelerant. Are there any other foam smithing tools we ought to cover? Or are we pretty good?
I think we're pretty good for now. We can always come back.
Absolutely. I will just make a sort of general statement about foam working is that just about anything you can do with leather working, you can do on foam with some exceptions. But a lot of the tools, like leather working tools like punches for punching holes, are also awesome on foam. We mentioned a heat gun, a bandsaw, disc sander. And like I said before, most of the general purpose tools are all really good for foam smithing. VoiceOver Dad is curious if you need a respirator for foam smithing. If you're going to use contact cement, like barge, anything that's toxic, you definitely want a respirator. You definitely want to work in a well-ventilated area. If that isn't an option for you, you could use hot glue instead of contact cement. It's not my favorite method. Other people like it more.
If you're going to do any kind of fancy carving that involves melting the foam, like using a wood-burning tool or a soldering iron, you definitely want to have a respirator. Or also work outside, really, because it's like it's going to stink up the whole place because you're burning. Yeah. Anytime you're going to burn foam, like if you lightly hit it with a heat gun, it's not burning it. If you hit it too hard with a heat gun and, you know, it looks burned, then you're burning the foam. Yep. You want to have a respirator on for that. Otherwise, you just need a dust mask because foam dust does tend to get everywhere, especially if you're using a belt sander or a rotary tool. So dust mask. Or respirator, depending on if it's dust or fumes.
Yeah, if it's dust and your boogers are black, then you're not doing a good job of filtering that dust before it gets into your nose. So yeah, wear a dust mask when you're sanding a lot of it, especially if you're sanding it with like a rotary tool or on a belt sander. Rusty's curious if we use the scalloped blade to cutting foam. I have one. I actually don't use it very often. The challenge with that is that the blade doesn't remove any material, which means it makes a really nice clean cut. But if I try and run that against the fence on my bandsaw, the foam binds. If I'm doing freehand and just pushing it around, then the scallop blade is really great for that. But I usually don't do that. I usually use the bandsaw to like cut nice clean beveled edges. I use the fence a lot. So I tend to use an 18 TPI metal cutting blade for cutting foam. It leaves a pretty smooth cut. But it depends. Other people have their own preferences. I recommend buying all of the tools and then try them all out for yourself.
And then you have a hoarding problem.
And then, there's that. Great. Well, we're going to move on to the next thing that I don't know very much about. Sewing.
Sewing machine.
A sewing machine is pretty great to have for any costume. Even if you're not doing a tailored costume, if you're doing like... some good foam smithing. Things like straps. You got to strap your armor to yourself. Or if you want to glue things like elastic to foam, it's really helpful to sew that elastic onto a non-stretchy material, something like nylon webbing, and then glue that nylon webbing down to your foam. That way, when the elastic stretches and pulls like it's supposed to, it won't pull out of the hot glue. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I use our sewing machine for the most, is for strap attachments for our costumes.
Yeah.
And we have it's not a super fancy sewing machine, but it's, in the heavy duty category. So it struggles with stretchy fabrics. There are some kinds of things you can do to switch out in your sewing machine to make that easier, but it's more designed for being able to sew through a couple layers of like nylon webbing and Velcro, which is, perfect for us. I do think we do need to invest in something that's easier for bodysuits, because I did that and with our machine and it was kind of tricky. That's a whole other world of just figuring out what kind of sewing machine you need for the type of sewing work you do.
Right.
Because there's different feet you can get that make it easier.
Oh, yeah.
That's a whole world. You can get, yeah.
So in the chat there, Corium9 says, did you guys cover, Corium's got a thing about rulers. Yes, we talked about measuring devices. Fisher Build says, I recommend leather needles, or specifically the type of needle that is appropriate for the type of sewing you're doing. This is something that took me a lot of needles to figure out. Stretchy material, like Lycra or spandex, you need a stretchy material needle. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. I mean, if you Google around, you'll find there's different size things, and then there's the European size and the American size, and they're usually both on the same thing. It's the internet's got it all figured out, so just go follow what they do.
We'll try and find a guide to needles, and we'll link it in the show notes.
And that's exactly what I did. Is I just Googled it and found someone suggesting things, and there's a special walking foot that helps with the stretchy fabric.
What are the little clampy things you use to clamp the seams before sewing?
There's like little clips. They're kind of universal, but the sewing community and the leatherworking communities really embrace them. But yeah, they're little spring clips. They're designed to stay closed. And they're not really good for when you have two seams coming together, unless, you know, you have it so the seams can be sewn through. So they're good for certain situations, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's these things here.
They're really handy for, like, I did a lot of vinyl work on that silly giant inflatable shoe I did. They were perfect for that because getting pins through the upholstery vinyl would have been such a pain.
Oh, yeah. So those things are really awesome. What's the other thing in here? Oh, snaps. These are mechanical snaps for taking things on and putting things together and taking them apart. What's cool about these is usually they have they can rotate, which you might want for your costume. Or if you put two of them on a piece and two of them on your armor, you could snap a piece of armor to your bodysuit and it won't rotate. If you want to rotate, just use one and it'll spin.
So there's some tools you can get to help apply your snaps. I think the ones I use the most are the ones you have to do by hand. They're called sew-on snaps. And the snaps have little holes in them, and you sew the thread through the holes in the snaps and attach it to the fabric. But, like, again, overlapping with leather working is there's a lot of kind of those snaps you can punch into materials with, like, little helpful punchers and things. So those are great, too. It just depends on how you want to apply things.
Let's see here. In the chat, Professor Cosplay says, I use my sewing machine for my fiberglass Nazgul gauntlets to sew all the finger plates to the leather strips.
That's awesome. Cool.
Another really great thing to have on hand is hook and loop, also known as Velcro. But before you run off to Joann's and buy a ton of rolls of Velcro for way too much money, what was that? I think a big truck just went by. McMaster Carr sells hook and loop, which is, you can get it in a whole bunch of different sizes.
We like to get the big sheets of it.
Yeah. So it basically, it comes in two rolls.
That's the one we get.
This one here, yeah. Extra wide hook and loop. So this is just two sheets of Velcro, basically, but as a whole roll that are like 3 feet wide. So if you want to Velcro like a 3 foot square thing to another thing, you could totally do that. It hot glues pretty well. It barges pretty well. You can sew it to stuff.
Yeah,
and you can cut it into custom shapes because it is a massive sheet.
Right, so you just use exactly what you need. The hook side doesn't hot glue well. It's still got that plastic backing, but the loop side is like a cloth backing, so you can at least glue that side down. We are straying more into materials, but that is totally a good one
right.
to point out.
That's just, yeah.
That's just a nice thing to have.
Very good things to have on hand. And then, of course, scissors.
Oh, right.
That are only for fabric.
Yeah, I have a little, I have really nice sewing scissors. Really, really nice for me. I don't know. They were probably like $20.
So. Yeah, you don't have to, I mean, if you do a ton of sewing, you should probably get a really good one. But you don't need a good, like a really good pair of scissors. You just need ones that are meant for fabric and that only get used on fabric.
Yeah, they are.
That's critical.
The ones I have a little sleeve that they slide into, and I make sure that they're always, that's its ending position. It always goes in the sleeve. And the sleeve, I've written on it for fabric only. So you can't really mistake it. Just grab it, you know, accidentally. I remember doing that as a kid, though. Did you used to do that, too?
My mom had her pair of scissors that we were not to use, and I used them all the time.
Yeah, I did the same
thing.
And
I got yelled at every single time I used them.
Yep. And why are my scissors dull? And they have, like, hot glue on them and stuff. Could have been anyone.
I'm trying to find the one.
I think we might have just bought that locally.
Maybe. Oh, you know what? I bet we did.
Yeah, that was so long ago. The scissors that did show up when Bill was looking for them are, they're called scrapbook scissors. Those are nice for if you're doing a lot of like peppercora work, a lot of paper crafting. They have little pointy tips on the blades instead of like the offset that scissors tend to have. So you can do really sharp curves and changes in a very tiny amount for scrapbooking.
Yeah. Voiceover Dad is curious how you sharpen scissors. Whenever we've never bought like really good scissors, and if they ever are not sharp anymore, I usually just throw them away and get new ones.
We have a scissor sharpener.
We do?
Yeah. It's like a It's you put the blades in and there's a thing in the middle and you snip it to sharpen it. Like, meow, meow.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Don't use an actual knife sharpener though. I did that once and destroyed a pair of scissors because the knife sharpener was trying to make the blade even, but you want it to be offset. So, whoops.
Here's a good example. This isn't the one we have, but I just quickly found this on Amazon. Something like this would be really good.
Oh, it has the little thread cutter
Yeah,
with
a
it
little thread
too.
cutter. This one's got really great reviews and it's like $30. That's not terrible.
Yeah, that's something you know. We don't have one of those. But if you're doing a lot of sewing and you have to go back and cut off the extra thread from all your sewing machine stuff, you don't think about it. But just like having to do that snipping motion a billion times is gets old really fast. So those scissors are designed to be sprung open. So you just with a light pressure, it closes and then reopens. So you don't have to like destroy your hands.
A couple of other really great tools. Rotary cutter is awesome. Someone mentioned that in the chat.
Oh yeah, they're like a little.
Oh, awesomely nerdy. Says rotary cutter and a good seam ripper. But yeah, the rotary cutter is a circular blade that you just run along your fabric like a pizza cutter, and it cuts it really well. And then a seam ripper, which is critical for when you sew something and then you have to take it immediately
When you
apart.
when it's
Not if,
yeah,
when.
it's gonna happen. Yeah, if you end up with like a little bird's nest of thread, you can pick it apart with your seam ripper. The nubbin end of the seam ripper, there's usually a little rubber end. If you're taking apart a whole seam that's, pretty loosely stitched, you can pop that under the seam and then drag it along the seam, and it should just take off everything really quickly. Unless it's a really complicated stitch or something.
Awesomely Nerdy mentioned that apparently if you cut foil with scissors, aluminum foil, that will sharpen. I've heard
Yeah,
that.
I've never tried
Never
it.
actually tried it before. Just gonna disclaimer.
I've tried, quick story. Bill was down at Tested doing some foam smithing stuff, so he took his tools with him. I didn't have a sharp knife that was left behind,
Took them
so
all with me.
I tried all the mugs we had in the house to flip them upside down and do the knife sharpening thing on the bottom on the non porcelain coated surface of the mugs, like people have suggested. I don't think I was doing it right. But I tried it a whole bunch, and my knife got worse and worse. And I just quickly ordered one on Amazon. That was my solution to replace it. So, like, there are certain techniques that they're great suggestions, but I personally haven't gotten them to work.
Something I forgot to mention early on for basically all crafting is some sort of cutting mat, like a
Oh,
self-healing cutting mat,
that's a good one.
so that you can work on any surface without damaging that. So Fisher Build says, you need a cutting mat. Do you need a cutting mat for cutting with the rotary cutter for
I'd say
fabric?
yes
Yeah,
for that.
definitely.
I
It's razor sharp, like crazy scary sharp.
Yeah, it's also something when you're cutting, you don't want your hand in the way. It's tempting to do because you're holding down the fabric, but that thing is, there's nothing stopping it. So, just like other sharp things, don't have any of your parts on the other side of the sharp thing. It's a general rule, life rule with any sharp tool.
With cutting mats, you can get them in all sorts of colors, shapes, and sizes. I want to cover all of every horizontal surface I have. It doesn't even necessarily have to be a specific cutting mat, just like an eighth inch thick piece of high density polyethylene or something like that should just protect whatever surface you're putting it on. Once that big piece of plastic gets ruined enough, you can rip it up and put another one on there. But with the giant white one that we have in there, we've had that for years and it's still doing fine.
Yeah, I do have to shove it aside when I'm doing work with a heat gun, because that there are some mats that are heat resistant. The ones we have are not, so they will start to warp and deform if you use a heat gun on them. So just be careful about that.
Great. I think that's a good that's just about everything I know on sewing. So let's move on. The
Yeah,
next thing is
just like any other kind of maker discipline. You can go down a rabbit hole of ways to make your life easier. So, and I think sewing is a great candidate for that, where anytime you're sewing something, if you're getting frustrated and can't do something right, just search around online for a little bit. There's probably an easier way to do it because that industry has everything figured out. They have so many cool techniques.
Turns out they've been doing it for decades.
Yeah.
Okay, painting and airbrushing. This is definitely an area where you can spend a lot of money on a bunch of stuff you don't need. We did a video with Stephen K. Smith recently about brushes. Worth checking out. We will link to it. Video with SKS. but I, similar to a lot of the other stuff, I would recommend just go to the craft store. There's a package of all the different types of brushes for like $5. And they're crap brushes. But get them, use them, try them all, see which ones you like, and then the brushes you use the most, go buy nicer versions of those brushes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're not sure what size you need at first until you try them out.
Right.
I will say we tend to use the synthetic ones. It's if you're in the craft store, there's a lot of stuff for like traditional oil painting and like watercolor, and they're like hedger hair brush and stuff. And it's like, I just find that the hair in those falls out a lot.
Yeah.
So like the synthetic ones seem nicer for the kind of work we do. But
maybe I just haven't never spent good money on a natural hair brush.
Yeah, yeah, we might have just gotten the cheapest ones, and it's just like some cat fur just shoved in there.
I don't think I've spent more than $10 on a brush.
Yeah.
But if you do a lot of hand painting and you have some favorites, then it's probably worth investing a little bit more in that. For paints, that's another thing people tend to have brands that they prefer. Some of the ones that we tend to prefer, we do a lot with acrylic paints. They're not toxic for the most part. I wouldn't drink them, but they can be airbrushed. They can be hand brushed for the most part. And there's a lot of options and a lot of colors out there. So for a lot of hand brushing, we like the Liquitex heavy body paints. It's worth diving in and learning a bit more about what all the different terminology means. For example, some of them are more transparent or translucent, and some of them are more opaque, and it should say so on the bottle, so read the bottle. But the Liquitex heavy bodies are pretty great. We don't really use the basics anymore. Some of the cheaper sort of entry-level paints, just they're not great. You can just pay a couple dollars more and get something that's a little bit more pigment heavy.
Yeah, so that's the thing, is we need coverage usually when we're painting.
Yeah.
So like if it's something that's going to take a whole bunch of layers, it's like, I don't have time for that. The Liquitex ones tend to be heavier pigmented, usually means they cost more, but then you use less of it and more importantly, it's time saving. But if you're going for, you know, like a look that you want to kind of show the layers underneath, I mean, the basic ones are fine. It's just like, just doesn't cover terribly well.
Some of the other ones we like, I like Tamiya paints. I don't know why that was so hard for me to remember.
Yeah, they're so the model making industry has got their paint game down.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of really good paint choices. Containers tend to be pretty small since they're usually used for miniature things, but Bill really likes to use those for airbrushing. The Tamiya paints.
I do. You can thin them with airbrush medium or with the Tamiyas. I found you can put a little bit of rubbing alcohol in there to thin them and run it through an airbrush.
They say they're just normal acrylics, but they definitely have a solvent in them that evaporates faster than water. So it almost seems to be more like a lacquer a little bit.
Right, but they do dry really fast, or at least dry to the touch really fast.
Yeah, and we for the Symbiote build, we used the water-based oil paints to weather it, and the paint underneath was Tamiya, and it didn't get as affected as lacquer does with the oil paints, which the lacquer just rubs right off. You need to put a clear layer, protected layer down first before you do the oil paints, but the Tamiya paints did get a little tacky, just a little bit, so there's something in them.
They're dry. It's dry now.
We
just had to let it dry.
All I know is because of that, since the paint dries so quickly for the Tamiya brand, it's hard to do brush on stuff that's very large. So like if you're doing little teeny things, you can brush it on like little miniatures and stuff. But if you're trying to cover a big area with a brush, it's really hard to get a nice flat layer, at least for me. I don't know. I'm really bad at it.
I do briefly want to talk about spray paints. I will say it's tempting to just jump into the spray paints because you don't need an airbrush, you can get a nice even coat. You will eventually hit a limit where spray painting just doesn't cut it anymore. And if you experiment with a lot of different brands and types of spray paints, you'll find that some of them don't play well together, some of them don't dry well. Atmosphere and humidity and temperature can have a huge effect on how they dry. There are still a handful of spray paints we use. We use spray primers for most stuff. Tamiya actually makes really great little rattle can spray paint primers for model making. Yeah, really, like, the fine surface ones are really awesome.
Yeah, those are great.
And we keep a couple of things, spray paint cans on hand for just general purpose stuff.
Yeah, usually clear coats will spray
clear coats or like a good flat black. Krylon makes a good flat black that we like.
We tend to stay away from enamels. We just don't have the working time availability for that. Enamels take a very long time to dry. They usually don't play well with other paints. We'll use lacquers sometimes. Bill really likes the all-clad metallic lacquers. Again, usually airbrush. But some of them come in tiny spray bottles as well, aerosol ones.
Very good. Cool. Lots of really good suggestions in the chat too. You guys are killing it today.
Yeah, and everyone has their own favorite. Mm-hmm. They have their own system that works and is their favorite. And we really do like learning about all the different ones. Mm-hmm. We have some we haven't gotten to try yet, like the golden paints we got.
That we bought and we haven't tried yet.
Yeah. There's like a stack.
I have a lot of things I bought that I haven't played with yet.
Yeah.
Talking about airbrushes, we have a video too. Again, we'll link this in the show notes. But if you're going to get into airbrushing and if you're doing a lot of prop and costume making, I highly recommend it. It unlocks a world of possibilities. Just buy a basic airbrush kit. Don't worry about getting the right airbrush or the right compressor. Just get one that works. Over the course of your life, you'll own several of them. Don't worry about it. We've already owned a dozen or so airbrushes. Just get one, the best one you can afford at the time, and use it a lot. Just practice with it. Run a lot of paint through it. Take it apart and clean it a lot. Get used to using it. What's more important than having the right airbrush is just having an airbrush and understanding how to use it.
Yeah, and using it. I think that's the important thing. And cleaning it after the end of every time you use it.
Yes, very important.
I was gonna compare it to a sewing machine in that it's a technical tool that when it runs well, it is the best thing ever. But when it's not running well and you force it to work, then it just makes your life miserable. But when you're done with using a sewing machine, you don't have to like strip it down and clean it right afterwards.
No.
Airbrush, you do.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else for airbrushing that you would want. Those little brushes for cleaning it. If you buy yours from Harbor Freight, right next to it is like, here's all the accessories, and it's a little keychain for like $2 with a bunch of little brushes on it.
Yeah, they look like little pipe cleaners, only they're more sturdy, and they have little metal handles on them. Those are super handy.
They also make tiny brushes that are meant for gluing eyelashes on. So they are eyelash brushes. You heard me right.
All the other industries have this figured out, and then we
I want to show you these because they're ridiculous.
They're so cute.
Fake eyelash brush. Maybe?
I mean, even just normal eyelash brushes.
That's what I looked up.
Those look like they'll be good to clean out your brushes because you can buy them in bulk sometimes.
Maybe it's eyelash glue brush. No. I'll look at my order history because I bought a bunch of these things. They're I don't want you guys to miss this. These things are so useful. A brush, maybe. Where are you?
Oh, we bought a lot of brushes.
We bought a lot of brushes. How can I not find this? Brush wood? That's not what I want. Maybe if I look up eyelash in my order history. There it is! All right.
Okay, disposable micro brush.
Micro brush. There you go. The tips on these are so tiny. We'll have a link in the show notes. Here, I'll drop it in the chat too.
It's adorable.
Yeah, for $6 you get 100 of them.
It's just nice for small applications of things too. Like I don't always use them for cleaning.
I mean it is just a teeny tiny little brush. Micro brush, boop. There you go. Super handy for like cleaning out the very tip of the airbrush.
And we haven't really we barely dipped our toe into the world of catalyzed paints. Another industry that has everything figured out is the automotive industry. We kind of pretend like that we put on durable paints, but they're the ones that really haven't figured out, because this stuff goes on cars outside. It has to be scratch resistant and weather resistant, and it's paints that when you mix the two parts together, they catalyze instead of drying, so that like it, humidity isn't as much of an issue. The base stuff isn't as much of an issue, as long as it's another catalyzed thing, right? I don't know. Again, haven't really used them that much. We've done a clear coat once. I think that was with the Commander Holly helmet.
And that was just a rattle can.
Yeah, it was a rattle can where you pop the bottom and that's where the catalyst is. You mix it up and it starts to cure inside the can. You have like a day to use it before it becomes a solid plastic brick in there. And it feels more like a plastic when it's cured, kind of like when you run your hand on, you know, a car. It doesn't feel like paint. It's really cool. But we don't really have the setup right now to deal with that stuff. It's usually pretty toxic and technical skill to learn, so it's something you want to practice a bunch. Usually get a big HVLP sprayer instead of an airbrush, so get those big fancy sprayers.
If you want to dive more into painting, then Harrison Cricks over at Vulpen Props wrote a really great book, and it's for sale on our website. I will link to it for you guys, and it will be in the show notes. I recommend everyone who's into prop and costume making go read it. He's got some great information on spray paint.
He's got a really good chart in there to, because he personally learned what paints play well together and which ones don't. Good chart to follow whenever you're mix and matching your paints.
It's fantastic. So yeah, there you go. That is going to wrap it up on painting. Let's do a little bit on 3D printing since it's so useful. Oh wait, we had a couple questions here. Corin Gami says, do you ever use a magnifying glass when painting? No, we don't really do anything that tiny, miniature painting.
But for cosplay, I personally have the 5-foot rule. That's for work for myself. It's like, if it looks good from 5 feet away, it's good enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
But for miniature painting, that would be super handy.
Yeah, definitely. Fisher Build says, I've had a nightmare of a time with quick connect hoses. They leak too much. That seems to me like the sort of thing that you want to spend good money on good connectors. I've had similar results. The the MPT quick connect ones I got from Harbor Freight, you gotta put a ton of Teflon tape on there, and even so the connections tend to leak a bit. But for my airbrush, we got some little quick connects for the Iwata.
Yeah, because we have Badgers and Iwatas, and we want to make sure they both work with the same thing. Yeah,
we put adapters on them so that the same or different brands of airbrush could all quick connect with the hose. And we got some good little nice quick connect things.
Those have been great.
Yeah, I think those were the ones from Iwata. I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, they haven't leaked at all.
We got good ones, and they haven't leaked.
Our little airbrush compressor is still working, but it definitely has some kind of very slow leak that is not related to the quick connects, because it's been doing it before that. It's been dropped a few times because it wiggles a little bit, so it would wiggle off the table, after a while of use. So we'll probably invest in a little airbrush compressor again sometime soon, because that one's the problem is now if you're using it, it constantly is on because it's trying to get air back in it.
All right, time for 3D printing.
You need a 3D printer.
You do need a 3D printer. They're so cool.
It's really hard to 3D print unless you get your 3D printing done elsewhere, and then your process starts when the print arrives.
Yeah, so you don't have to own a 3D printer. You could get it printed elsewhere. Maybe someone locally or a shop locally that'll do it.
Or Shapeways.
Or you can outsource it to Shapeways. You send them your files, they print it, and mail it to you. They're really great. But if you want to get a 3D printer yourself, one of the questions we get a lot is, which 3D printer should I buy?
That's a good question.
And similar to what I've said about other things, buy the best one you can afford. Now, the best one, the criteria that makes it good for you might be different for someone else. Depends on what you're going to make. What we found currently, we have an Ultimaker that we really like. The only thing with Ultimakers is they tend to be more expensive. On the other end, you've got things like the CR10 and all of the different versions of the CR10 that are $500 or less. From my own experience, getting the $200 or less 3D printers has been a bit of a gamble. I've heard a lot of people having really good experiences with really cheap 3D printers. I've heard a lot of people, myself included, who have had pretty crappy experiences with really cheap 3D printers. Personally, I would prefer not to tinker with the machine and just pay a little more for a machine that's going to work fine out of the gate, but maybe you want to tinker with a 3D printer. That's up to you.
Yeah, it's a tricky situation. Back to talking about Harbor Freight, there are certain kinds of tools you can get away with purchasing there that isn't as much of a gamble, but the more technical something becomes, the more moving parts, and the lower the price, there's probably very little quality control on the things they produce.
Or none whatsoever.
Yeah. So you get these 3D printer kits, and they could be made in different factories, the exact same printer, and it's just a gamble.
Or you might buy a printer, and I might buy the same printer from the same website and the same product listing, and each receive a box with different parts in it.
Yeah.
Because they may have shipped one out, and then they went to ship out more, and they're like, oh, we don't have the same screws. All right, well, what can we get that's close enough? A lot of that stuff just gets drop shipped. They're not building and packaging this stuff all in one factory.
Yeah, for the really really affordable 3D printers, that tends to be the case. Then you get a company like Prusa, who a lot of their parts for their 3D printer are 3D printed by their 3D printers.
By their 3D printer.
And then when they want to make an update to their 3D printers, design-wise, they can just immediately change it because it's all in one place, getting printed through their giant printer farm and make new parts for their printers, which is pretty wild. It's a neat thing. Bill's linking to a video where Thomas Sandlanderer goes through Prusa's factory, I think.
It's really cool.
Yeah, that's the one.
So Prusa seems to be kind of hitting it or banging on all cylinders right now. They offer machines that are fairly reasonably reasonable price, reasonable size machine, with good quality, and their customer support from all experiences I've heard has been fantastic. I had a chance to use their Mark III 3D printer, and that I had nothing but good things to say about it. Oh, here we go. Check this out. This is
so cool.
The farm. All of these are Prusa 3D printers that are printing parts to make more Prusa 3D printers, which I think is just bonkers. That's so cool. And like Britt was saying, if they upgrade the hardware or any of those 3D printed parts, they just push those files out to all these printers and start printing different new upgraded parts. I also want to point out too, Bob from I Like to Make Stuff just did a really great short video on picking out a 3D printer. So I'm going to link that. Yeah, his bits video. That's a really fantastic place to start if you're looking for a 3D printer. He doesn't specifically point out like you should buy this printer or this printer. He helps break down the criteria so that you can make an informed decision yourself. I thought that was really useful.
It is we're kind of coming out of it a little bit, but it is really the wild west of what 3D printer to get, because it's like it's kind of how I feel about drones right now too. There's just so many different kinds to get, and a lot of them are just okay. You're like, which one should I get? And it's like, there's a billion to choose from. Everyone and their brother is coming out with their own version, and a lot of them are very similar. And we haven't gotten to 3D print that much stuff, so we have only tried a couple different ones.
Mm-hmm. Our current stable of 3D printers, the Ultimaker 2 Extended Plus is the one that I use the most. It's my favorite one. It works so great for us. I have it set up perfectly to run ABS. Why bother try anything else, right? That's kind of where I am right now. But we also have the Form 2, which is extraordinary. We don't use it very often. We only use it when we need that really nice fidelity. But we also have a Lulzbot Mini. That thing is just a tank.
Yeah, that one like, has... and it's funny because...
We should build a battle bot out of it, because that thing is super durable.
The Lulzbots have very durable cases. That one has, the head on it is for the Flexi-Struder. They have a new printer head that just came out that works for both normal filament and flexible. But that one we just leave on flexible filament when we need, we've done replacements for stuff around the house. We did the gas cap on our car, you know, the little rubber holder, those eventually degrade and fall off. So we did a replacement for that because Joel from the 3D Printing Nerd did a video on how to do that. And we're like, we could do that too. So that's just good for like functional stuff too. But we use that one in the Ninja Star video.
Yeah.
For Genji's shurikens. and did a flexible 3D printed version of that.
What? My computer is just freaking out.
Maybe it's because you're trying to play videos while we're streaming.
I just want to share a video. Rusty was asking about 3D printing a drone.
Yes, RC Life
on. RC Life on is really awesome for that.
He's just fun too. I love his how excited he gets about his project.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I'll share his channel with you. I'll try and share his channel with you.
You've probably seen one of his videos. The one that went viral that I can think of was he made 3D printed RC car tires that had big paddles on them, and when he drove really fast on top of the water, it would paddle across the water and not sink.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
So he doesn't really do prop and costume stuff, but he knows a lot about 3D printing. So he's a really great resource. Awesome. I will include that in the show notes. Boop. Link added. So yeah, there's a lot of printers to pick from. Bob's video is really good. We'll also leave links for 3D Printing Nerd. That's Joel. Oh, what have I done? We're good. I started typing in the wrong spot.
He just went to a different layer.
I went to a different reality for a moment.
It got so dark.
Tom Sandlatter.
Angus
Maker's Muse. The thing with 3D printers is that if you're buying one this month or you're buying one 6 months from now, it's going to be a totally different world of options. So you... it's worth following a lot of people who keep their finger on the pulse of that world to be getting up to date.
Yeah, the New York Maker Fair that just happened. That's Prusa announced their new resin printer. So I'm curious to see how that goes.
Oh, I'm very excited about that. Corin Gami says, "Have you ever 3D printed a household item?" Yeah. I suddenly can't think of an example. Well. Not that it's necessarily a household item, but the light that's pointing at my face right now, I printed a little hook to hang the wire on.
Yeah, you've done a lot of stuff for stuff around the shop. Like, we had a mic stand that had a thing on the bottom of it that you could just slot into stuff, and Bill 3D printed a slot attachment that would go straight into the table. Like, that was on your old table over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bushing!
Yay!
So, like, 3D printing is good to make things fit other things that normally don't go together. So it's a good way to make, like, our dust collection, Bill created a tapered, like, PVC pipe attachment thing to fit the different dust collections.
Oh, custom adapters?
Yeah,
custom adapters. Like, I need to make this thing fit into this thing, but there's no thing that exists, and you just 3D model two different things and then whoop, melt them together and then 3D print it.
Yeah, if you follow Joel's channel, 3D Printing Nerd, he'll do that occasionally where he just like has something he needs to fix in his house.
Oh, yeah.
It's really fun to watch.
It's pretty great. Are there any three tools for 3D printing that are worth
You usually
mentioning?
Need some kind
I'm
of
I'm looking at my printers right now.
Yeah, you usually need some kind of help getting the print off the bed.
Yeah.
Printers usually come with a scraper, if that's the case.
A really... Like, they tend to come with ones that are, like, this thick. the blade is just really thin.
Yeah.
Like, paint scraper-type spatulas. Metal ones are really awesome, so you can really... I even took mine and sharpened the edge. It's a little dangerous, but get under the
That's
prints.
Something you want to be careful of. Don't put your hand on the other side of that. Again, sharp things.
It's great on the Ultimaker. It's got a glass bed, TPE, like a plastic bed might get gouged by that, like our the TAS Mini.
Yeah, I mean, and then you can get fancy beds that are flexible. Like, that seems to be what they're coming out with now, which is awesome. But your printer should come with one if they're needed, usually. I think that's how it works. I don't know. We've only gotten a couple printers.
Yeah.
We don't really have a good...
So, we're coming up on the end of the podcast here. I just want to slide quickly into some machining, because you can do some machining with your 3D printing. And it's super useful. Something I recommend everyone gets is a set of taps and dies. So a tap is for threading the inside of a hole, and a die is for adding a thread to the outside of a rod. So you can make your own threaded rods or screws. 3D prints can be tapped, especially ABS. It machines very well. I've done that a bunch where I'll 3D model a hole slightly undersized, and after it prints, I'll run the tap in there and add threads to it, and you can put screws, like real metal hardwares, into a 3D printed part. A couple other things that are good for machining, a lathe. If you're going to get into that world, a lathe is pretty much mandatory.
Like a little machining lathe?
Little machining
lathe.
Not
like a big woodworking lathe?
No, you don't need a big lathe. Most of the stuff we make is like this, you know, that big. Mm-hmm. So you don't need a massive lathe unless you're going to make giant stuff. Now, I will say, if you can get your hands on a big metal lathe, you can make tiny parts on a big lathe. And so if you find one at a good price, then grab it.
Yeah, that's something that you'll see on Craigslist. Because it's just like, it's such a specialty thing. And it tends to sit around for like 20 years in someone's shop. Depending on the country you're in, it can be very difficult to find fasteners that will work for the things that you're trying to put together. Like your Blade Runner gun 3D model. Like there's fasteners that Bill provides the links for that you can get. But depending on where you are in the world, sometimes they're really hard to find. So if you can make your own,
That would be
pretty
wonderful.
Powerful. Yeah.
All you need is a hunk of metal. You can turn it down on the lathe and then tap it. You got your own custom-made screw that's perfect for what you need. A mill would be next. I don't have one yet, but those are crazy handy for a lot of stuff. I'll just add mill to that. But yeah. I really just wanted to talk about taps and dies because they're just really, really mighty useful.
Yeah, and they can lean into some of the other categories too. Maybe not as useful in sewing, but like just
challenge accepted.
Like if you want to put like a bolt in somewhere, or a screw or whatever, you know, just being able to make something custom for that and not have to use a found object that doesn't quite work right. You know, if you need something to be sturdier.
We will also link to some machining YouTube videos that we really like.
We just want to link to This Old Tony. He's amazing.
They're the best videos on YouTube right now. This Old Tony is really good. Mr. Pete 222 or Tubal Cane he's literally a shop teacher, like a machining shop teacher.
He's also a YouTube shop teacher.
YouTube shop teacher. He's really great. ABOM 79, 76, ABOM. You look up machining and ABOM, you'll find him. For more automated type machining, NYC CNC is like the place for that too.
They're making the robot they started doing. Is it Johnny?
They're making Johnny 5. Making a Johnny 5.
Yeah.
Ah, I'm so excited.
And like in the first video, they like offhandly said, and this will be, you know, something we'll work on off, you know, on and off for the next 2 years. I'm like, what? I think I'm pretty sure it's what they said. It's going to take a while. But, yeah, they're doing some 3D printing in that, too. It's not just all machining. Should be a cool build. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
And the moral of the story is we watch a lot of YouTube maker content, and it's all really good. I don't have time to make stuff anymore because I want to watch all the incredible stuff that all of you guys are making. And then I need all the tools.
All the tools. Mm-hmm. Well, we covered everything, so great job, everyone. Very good. That's
Yay.
Not true. There are so many other tools that we could talk
All
about,
right.
And we will do that in a future episode.
Real quick, what's the one tool that you feel like you use the most, and what's the one tool that you regret that you purchased and haven't used?
So the bandsaw, I think, is hands down. I mean, I own three of them now, mm-hmm. just so I don't have to swap blades.
Yeah.
So I don't think I leveled up quite as much as I did when I bought that bandsaw. Although right now, if I could only buy one tool, I'd get a 3D printer.
Oh, that's a sneaky
right?
answer.
Right?
I figured you were going to go rotary tool because that's what I was going to go with.
No.
I really enjoy working with foam, so I think for me personally, it's rotary tool. But yeah if you're in a tiny apartment and you just can buy one tool, it's like you can't
beat it. You got to get a 3D printer.
Yeah, you can't beat
make
it.
Anything.
Yeah, like especially if we were just starting out now, I think that's the way we would go.
I don't have any tools that I bought that I regret because I don't use them, but I have bought tools that I regret because they were cheap pieces of crap.
Yeah.
Both jigsaws I've ever bought were crap. What's another terrible tool?
What did we get when we were moving out of our basement shop? Is there any tools we were just like, please come, take them, and we just like toss them out?
I don't think
the door?
So. There have been tools that I purchased through the years that were just poorly made and they were cheap. And I just replaced them.
Oh, we did get that giant air compressor that's really loud that we never use.
we may still use it. We still own it. We just couldn't run it in our basement because it's really loud.
Yeah. That's the thing about tools, I think, is like there's always the like, oh, I'm going to use this someday. It'll probably come in useful. We got that for a specific project. We were doing some air tool work.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was perfect for that, and we just haven't used it since.
But I can't think of what. Do you have one that you can think of that we bought that was a regret?
We probably returned it immediately. Maybe it was an air compressor that we switched out for a different air compressor. There was a time when we ordered one online and it was loud, and we sent it back and got a different one. So our first little pink
was. But it was a little. We ordered a. Oh no, I remember. Yeah. We ordered a littler one. I had a little air compressor. It died. I ordered a littler one. It was too loud. We sent it back and got one that was specifically a quiet one.
Yeah. So if we stuck with that one, that would have been miserable, especially when we're trying to film in the shop.
I can't believe we did not mention air compressors.
Yeah, our favorite one we don't even own. We got it as like a housewarming gift for Bill's.
Yeah, I should have given him my air compressor and kept that one.
And we heard good reviews on this one, and the reviews are all like, oh, it's really quiet and works really well. And they were using it, and I was like, that's really quiet.
crap, where is it? No. There it is, this guy here.
The California company.
California Air Tools, this fella right here. $200, is a little bit pricier, not too bad, though. And it is staggeringly quiet. Ultra quiet, as the name would suggest. Ultra quiet.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like whisper quiet, but compared to a normal air compressor where you can't talk over it, it's great. And we probably need one of those.
Yeah. So I'll add that to the list too. And I think that's a really fantastic place to end it. So thank you guys so much for hanging out with us and bringing the great questions.
Yeah. Thank you for all the great suggestions in the chat too. If you're watching this later, all of the chat will be down here, so you guys can read along as well and make sure you don't miss out on any of the great suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Oh, Fisher Builds has questions about software for 3D printing. That's something I think we could do a whole podcast on. But just real quick, I can tell you right now, we do most of our design in Fusion 360. And most of our slicing in Cura or Simplify 3D. That's the short answer. But we'll have to dive into that deeper in a future episode.
Yeah, we need Joel on when we do the 3D printing episode. Just talk a whole bunch about that. That'd be great.
Yes, we should have Joel on. I think I'm missing Joel this weekend. I'm very excited. All right. That's it for this week. Thanks again so much for hanging out, everyone. And we'll catch you on the next one.
See you guys.
Toodaloo.
Hooray!
Yay! We could go on forever and ever and just keep adding stuff to this list.
Yeah, and everyone has their own favorite, and it's really cool to see, like, the different things people use or custom make for themselves. Like, there's certain thing they want to do. Like, if they're, like, a traditional sculptor, they'll make their own, like, sculpting tools for a very specific thing. And that's so cool to me that you do that. So, yeah, don't feel like this list is limiting. Just see it as a
good
inspiring.
Place to start.
Yeah. Or someone's like, hey, what do you want for Christmas? Just be like, bleh.
Let's see.
All of these.
Serenade Cosplay says, the compressor kit I got is a regret. It's only 1/5 horsepower, and that's not enough for HVLP. Yeah, that can be a bit of a bummer. This California Air Tools one is 1 horsepower, which is plenty powerful.
1 horse.
Exactly 1 horse. They fit that 1 horse right in that tank. That's pretty fantastic. The entire horse. Compared to, what's our... What's our, we got a DeWalt one, and we still use it every day.
Yeah, it's just, it's slightly leaky.
It's got a little bit of a knack to it.
Yeah.
This one is actually more expensive, too. I'd rather have that California Air Tools one, but it's pretty good. It's got 2 plugins, so you can plug 2 things into it, which is fantastic. It is, how many horsepowers? I don't see it. It is kind of quiet compared to most. It just says...
There's 2 more product details if you click on it. It should take you down.
Ah!
There you go. 1.1!
Oh! All right, that's slightly more powerful.
Tiny bit more hoarse.
But it's way louder than that California Air Tools one.
It's one of those things where when it pops back on, it's a little bit of a jump scare.
Yeah, and if you're filming stuff, then it becomes a problem.
Unless it's for a funny part at the end of the video.
I'm going to add this California Air Tools to my wish list. Because the moment that DeWalt one dies, I am buying this one.
I wonder if this is something that would go on sale on Black Friday. I have to keep an eye out. It's usually stuff I don't want. goes on sale. Or don't need. I was like, I already have that.
I actually think what we'll probably end up doing is when we need a big tank, getting one of their bigger ones. This is a 20-gallon one. We have a 21-gallon one from Harbor Freight, and that thing sounds like a truck. So loud. But when our current small one dies, oh, look at this one. That's so good. We'll get one of these guys. This a 20-gallon tank is probably more than enough.
This is the air compressor hour.
Yeah, look at this.
Like, I don't know pretty much anything about air compressors, except that you're supposed to drain the tank of air. Like, just there's a valve thing that you open up, and you don't leave air in the tank. It tends to collect moisture in there because of the... Is that because of the pressure difference?
The pressure compresses the air in there, which brings any moisture out of the air.
Right. It
gets condensed.
So it'll start to get rusty in there, and that can be a problem because it'll like weaken the tank over time. So it's one of those things where it's like, I don't even think I'd Craigslist one of these because you don't know if they took care of it before. Like, we were in the old shop, but I drained our compressor when I was done using it out of air, and brown water came out of it.
Yeah, rusty water.
It was rusty, so that's something you don't want to have to deal with.
All right, if I sit here, I'm going to spend $500 on a compressor. So I think it's time for us to head back into the shop.
Yeah, we got a... so you let you guys in on a little secret that you'll find out tomorrow is we have a video coming out tomorrow.
We do! Surprise video!
And the video we're currently working on now is going to come out on Monday. So there's a bonus video this week. So keep an eye out tomorrow for a bonus video. And it's a full 20-minute video, too. This is not just a little short one. But we're also in the shop working on a project for Monday. So we got to go get that done because we have a guest visiting on Friday. And we're going to film more videos.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so
all the videos.
Yeah. Got a lot of filming this week.
That's going to do it. Let's go get back to work. Thanks again for hanging out, everybody. We'll see you next week. We're going to be live streaming from the shop next week.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Toodaloo.